The reading this morning is taken from John chapter 21, the first 14 verses. Jesus and the miraculous catch of fish. Afterward, Jesus appeared again to his disciples by the Sea of Galilee. It happened this way. Simon Peter, Thomas, also known as Didymus, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples were together. "I'm going out to fish," Simon Peter told them, and they said, "We'll go with you." So they went out, got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. Early in the morning, Jesus stood on the shore, but the disciples did not realize that it was Jesus. He called out to him, "Friends, haven't you any fish?" "No," they answered. He said, "Throw your net on the right side of the boat and you will find some." When they did, they were unable to haul the net in because of the large number of fish. Then the disciple who Jesus loved said to Peter, It is the Lord." As soon as Simon Peter heard him say, "It is the Lord," he wrapped his outer garment around him, for he had taken it off, and jumped into the water. The other disciples followed in the boat, towing their net full of fish, for they were not far from the shore, about 100 yards. When they landed, they saw a fire of burning coals there with fish on it, and some bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter climbed back into the boat and dragged the net ashore. It was full of large fish, 153. But even with so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." None of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. Jesus came, took the bread and gave it to them, and did the same with the fish. This was now the third time Jesus appeared to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. This is the word of the Lord.
Morning, everybody. It must have been a morning a bit like this that we're reading about this morning, I felt. And I also thought that Alison's three words, saying thank you. What was the second one? Sorry, wasn't it? Sorry. And then moving on, can be said almost about this morning's passage. It's the final chapter of John's Gospel. Pretty much the story of Peter's reinstatement, which begins with a miraculous catch of fish and then breakfast on the beach. I think of it as breakfast on the beach. He told his disciples, when he appeared to them in Jerusalem, to go to Galilee and wait for him. And that's what they'd done. But sometimes, as we know, waiting can be very taxing. And Peter wasn't renowned for his patience, was he? And he must have been constantly going over in his mind that awful Thursday night when he let down his best friend by refusing to acknowledge him, by rejecting him. And then that awful cockerel cry. So I imagine Peter and the others, because they'd all let Jesus down, was unable to settle to anything. And we're not told where they were waiting. I imagine him pacing up and down a room. We are told previously that the doors were locked. And maybe they still were. So fear must have been quite a strong feeling that they had there. So there he is pacing up and down in a room, in a locked room. And there's only 7 of them that are mentioned this morning. I've got to do something. I've just got to do something. I'm going fishing. So along with the rest of that little group, that's exactly what he did. And they said, we will come with you. They wanted to be together. There was less fear, perhaps, if they were together. Peter is an act person. He does things, and he does them now, and he does them when he thinks it's right to do them, often without the thinking. John, the writer of this gospel, is much more a thinker and patient and understanding sort of person. But he too must be suffering great guilt, because although he did stay by the fire on the Thursday night, he didn't support Jesus, did he? So have the disciples turned their backs on being fishers of men, of going out into the world to proclaim the gospel? Are they thinking about going back to their old routine, their old work? Did Peter think it would be easier to go back to being a fisherman than suffering the guilt he is suffering now and the threat of being killed? Peter must have been so confused. And they all went fishing. Thomas, Nathanael, 2 others not named, James, John, and Peter. Now we know Peter, James, and John were fishermen. We don't know about the others, what their jobs were. And we don't know where the rest of the 12 are. And I thought, as I was writing this, maybe the 2 who aren't named weren't members of the 12. Maybe they were disciples, followers, but not people Jesus had personally called. I think we all probably have these feelings, times of great sadness and stress. I'm speaking on Thursday at a memorial service for my dear friend David. He died last week. David and I were church wardens together for many years. I might have told you that before. And I loved him and his wife dearly. Living now, as I do here in Suffolk, it hasn't been easy for me to get down to Kent to visit with David. And he spent the past months lying bedridden, he couldn't walk, and longing to die, longing to go and be with his wife Anita, who had died just before Christmas, longing to go and be with his Lord. And oh, how much I longed to visit David. I managed it twice, and I phoned regularly, and we sent lots of emails. But I wasn't able to do anything for David other than just be his friend at a distance. And as I speak at his memorial, I'm being his friend still at a distance. Was Peter thinking about distancing himself? Were the other disciples doing the same? What were the other disciples doing who weren't there? Had they gone home? Some of them must have lived some distance away, others closer. But these 7 went to the boat. I imagine it was Peter's boat. Did the nets need mending? Was it in a mess? They hadn't been there much for the past 3 years. We do know Jesus preached from Peter's boat at one time, and that they had been fishing that day too, But I wonder how often they did use that boat during the 3 years Jesus was with them. So once they tidied it up and cleared it up, out they went to fish and caught nothing. All night and caught nothing. I don't suppose that improved Peter's temper or peace of mind. And what are they going to do next if they can't catch fish? And then dawn, that beautiful time of day, was so near. Last Friday I woke at 6 and I looked out of my bedroom window and it was a heaven-sent dawn. Some of them just are. I think God gives us presents of beauty from time to time. A song, a piece of art, a multicoloured sky, something that almost smacks us in the face with the joy and gladness. I remember once in Beirut going to meet Ken for lunch at a fish restaurant on the beach. And I'd got the radio on, and as I drove, I was coming from work, he was already there, and as I drove up to the restaurant, I heard for the first time ever Mozart's Clarinet Concerto. And I just had to park my car and listen to it all the way through. And Ken was hanging over the concrete wall way above saying, come on, what are you doing? What are you messing about with? But I had to listen to that music. It was a gift from God, as was that dawn last Friday. It's up to us what we do with these precious gifts. They're short. They don't last long. We need to appreciate them quickly and acknowledge them. And if you think about it, Jesus was only with these men for 3 years. How fast that time must have gone, and how much they must have done in that time together. Was the night-long failure of no fish a revelation of God's displeasure? Would Peter have been thinking that, do you think, or the other disciples? We know that God still loved them. But did they still know this? Because they'd lost Jesus. And he was the physical presence of God's love for them. I don't know about you, but there are times when I feel so alien to my faith, have difficulty in believing that God loves me in the way that we're told he does, because I know how awful I am. And I need to tell myself over and over that I really am loved by God. And so here they are, tired, possibly hungry, guilty, cold, and they encounter the risen Jesus for the third time. I think it very likely that the events of that morning were designed to remind the disciples of things that Jesus had taught them. So similar was this morning to the time when Jesus asked Simon Peter to push out from the shore in his boat so that Jesus could preach from that boat. And Jesus telling them at that time that he would make them fishers of men. And what about the story of the prodigal son? And here we are on this morning, Jesus instructing them again to cast their nets on the right side of the boat. At that moment, he appeared as a stranger to them. And I wondered, was Jesus able to change his look? We know that the two on the road to Emmaus did not recognize him at all until he opened himself to them. Was that because they didn't expect to see him? Was that because they didn't know him well enough? Or was it just that it was so unexpected that their minds couldn't recognize? And was this the case with Peter and the disciples in that boat at that dawn morning? Often we do see things and hear things that are so unexpected that we cannot make sense of them, even though at another time we probably would be able to. So I still don't know whether Jesus changed the way he looked or whether they just didn't recognize him and nothing had changed. Do you have a picture in your mind for that morning when you read this passage? Jesus by the lake, hailing them on the boat. This 21st chapter of John's Gospel, according to scholars, was not written by John. Not written by the author of the first 20 chapters. The phrasing is different, the words he uses are often different. And yet, there has never been a written Gospel of John in the whole 2,000 years since Jesus' birth and death that hasn't got this with it. So it's as old as the Gospel. It just wasn't, according to scholars, written by John. And it's almost like a PS at the end of the story. Someone, a group, perhaps, felt that the ending needed to be tidied up. So that people say, what happened to Peter? What happened to John? And so this chapter, which we'll be following, I think, this evening and next week, was added. 153 fish. Does the number matter? Who counted them? And why? Not a number we find anywhere else. It's not a sort of familiar number to the Bible. Were they perhaps reinforcing the fishers of men statement? All the nations of the world, all the fish in that net, everyone obedient to the words of Jesus. Remember, the net didn't break. Jesus' final harvest in John's Gospel doesn't let a single fish slip away. Jesus' invitation is for all nations, all fish, all people, regardless of who they are or where they come from. And the net doesn't break. In a way, this chapter is mostly about Peter. I know John is very much involved in it too. But I'm going to finish by reading from a book by an author that I absolutely love. Her name's Debbie Thomas. She's American. She's black American. And I think she writes the most wonderful truths about faith and Jesus. And I'm only going to read you a short part. Who do you say that I am? You are the one who found me in a fishing boat and gave me a new vocation. You're the one who healed my mother-in-law. You said, okay, walk on water. You're the one who washed my feet when I tried to stop you. You're the one who told me, accurately, that I would be a coward on the very night you needed me to be brave. You're the one I denied 3 times to save my skin. You're the one who looked into my eyes with pain and pity when the cock crowed. You're the one who fed me breakfast on a beach and spoke love into my humiliation. You're the one who gave me courage to preach to 3,000 people on Pentecost. You're the one who taught me that I must not call unclean what you have pronounced clean. You're the one who stayed by me through insults, beatings, and imprisonments. You're the one I followed into martyrdom. You are the Messiah, the Son of the Living God. And what Peter has learned is that Jesus is just as powerfully present in the questions as he is in the answers. To love what is unsolved is to allow Jesus to enter more deeply into your heart than any impersonal claim about him will ever do. Live the question, and we do all have questions. That's the invitation from Jesus. He makes it over and over again to every one of us. And it's an invitation of love.